Howdy, hey there, buddies and pals. Thanks for tuning in. I'm Jessica Munger, and this is Agitated Podcast, Episode 8. I'm living out my radio-making dreams. Thank you for listening. The first thing we're going to do is Caitlin's agitation.
Yes.
What is up with you, buddy?
I'm going to start. Okay, so my agitation, I had several things, but I decided to settle on the one that is actually kind of positive. So I was just visiting my family, and one of the things that shaped my political analysis is the fact that my father would make us watch documentaries, like, all the time. And so now, these days, I sort of avoid them because I don't really want to... you guys know what I mean? It's like sometimes just taking in the world is just like, I don't want to do that. I think about it all the time. But I was visiting my family, and so we hung out and had to watch not just documentaries, also like intense movies. But anyways, we watched this movie that was made, it was released in April this year. It's called The Year Earth Changed. And it's a documentary film about the impact on nature of the global lockdown due to COVID. And it's amazing. It looks at these different parts of the world and basically how nature was affected over, given that human beings retreated out of spaces that we share that we normally share with them, or really accurately where we normally take over, where they're supposed to be and where they have to be. And agitation, sometimes it's hard to convey, I think, what we or what I mean by that, because it's not just like, you know, we've talked about this before, it's like, it's not just irritation. But sometimes we even share things that are kind of like irritations. But agitation is really, you know, it's like this movie had me feeling so many things, all shook around. On one hand, it was extremely hopeful because even just in a year, and in some places the lockdown didn't even really last for a full year. In just a year, the ability for these animals to thrive with just a little bit of us stepping back was like astounding. Sea turtles, with so many more sea turtles being able to, you know, hatch out and safely make it back into the ocean from beaches, or other things that I didn't know about. Like, did you guys know that fucking tourism safaris that are all about, they're not about like hunting animals, that are about, you know, going and seeing these animals in their natural habitat. But cheetahs need, when they hunt, they end up like pretty far away when they make their kill from their young. And so they make this little call to call their babies over to them who have been like hiding and waiting, because cheetahs are actually pretty vulnerable, even though they're extreme. The adults are extremely fast. They're pretty slight build and small. And so
babies.
Yeah. Often the grownups, even oftentimes their catches will be raided by other animals, like even hyenas that are actually like bulkier than them. So they have to like guard their catches, and then their little slight babies will get picked off by like larger cats and things like that. And so they make this little call, but they can't make it too loud because that will tip off like lions and things as to where the babies are. And so they'll like make these little yips, and the babies are supposed to hear them and then come over to where the prey has fallen. But these fucking like people in these jeeps that are like there looking at them and like in wonderment of these animals drown out their ability to call their babies. And so they lose tons of babies as a result of this thing that's meant to be about like appreciating them. And so this, so last year, the cheetah brood was tremendously successful compared to normal. And there's just like so many examples like this, you know, and it's heartbreaking too, at the same time, of just like the impact that we have. It makes me cry. Nature is horrible, you know? And the things that we do, even when we're meaning well, I mean, so many of the examples were actually things where we're like, that are like rooted in tourism around appreciating nature, and us just stepping back just gave them so much space, and they took that space and were able to. So the movie is obviously geared to be very hopeful. It's narrated by David Attenborough, and it's just very like, and even the name of it, it's like the year Earth changed, and you're like, okay, but that's 1 year, and now we're back to normal, and like, what's happening to them now? And they don't say anything about that. So that was troubling to me, and I found it, you know, pretty disheartening if you think about it that way. But on the other hand, if you think about, if we were to just like be more intentional about the way that we are, even if we didn't stop industrialism, which obviously we do need to do, but even if industrialism was still carrying on, but we were just more conscious of the impact that we have, animals would be able to flourish so much more. And so if then you think about, you know, as industrialism collapses and whether we do it intentionally or whether it just inevitably happens, the space there will be. Obviously, you know, a ton of animals will be extinct before that point, and it's still tragic. So it just, very agitated, right?
Yeah.
Because all the
in like the deepest sense of the word.
But how exciting, I mean, in terms of hope, because we know how resilient nature is. I really appreciate that. I mean, we talk so much about this tipping point, and we're going to go past it, and then we're just fucked. But like, also to know that, like,
yeah, and some, and it was really cool. It went by like 3 months, 6 months. So it wasn't even like cumulative the whole year. Like, even after just like 3 months of not having all the cars and the pollution, the impact that that had for birds in the Bay Area was measurable. And whales have been able to, I don't remember, I'm not, you know, maybe it's not doubled, but like the number of whale calves that survived last year because there were not cruise ships going through their habitat was like enormous. You know, I mean, scientists on like all of these examples were just like, wow, we've never seen anything like this. So it's just like, if we could just, if we could just fucking pull back a little bit. So I really encourage people to watch the movie that yourself. I won't spoil like all the different things, but it was just like wondrous over and over and over again.
Yeah, I'm definitely going to watch that. And I'm glad you're talking about it, because I haven't really seen or heard anybody talking about that. And that just seems like really critically important evidence that everybody, you know, should be extremely aware of, because that is heartbreaking and kind of.
But it also is like, it's heartbreaking and it's also empowering, because it's like, we also think about like, oh, the whole system has to change for anything to change, you know? But it's like, literally, if I wasn't on this beach as these turtles were hatching out, like every individual actually makes an impact. So even though we believe in systemic change, we don't believe in individual change as the way that we're going to make the change that we need. It did change for me that perspective. And I mean, they were even talking about like, you know, I mean, you could pass laws that affect all these things as well. And there was nothing else that would happen except for a global pandemic that would allow the kind of research that was needed to prove these sorts of things
right,
as well.
Right.
And it was interesting to see the scientists have their minds blown, like stuff that they didn't even imagine or know was an impact that they could then see. It also is just frustrating that it like, it takes a pandemic instead of our own intentions. But there also is no reason why we couldn't have those intentions. Okay, I'm going to spoil one more, which was that this one was more of like a human reaction, the human animals. So people who live at the base of the Himalayas, because of the pollution in India, a whole generation of people had never known that the Himalayas were like this presence right above them. And after just like a few days, it was just a few days of the lockdown, people all of a sudden, and they showed like the, you know, the kind of footage of like, it, as if it was like in real time clearing. And it's, I mean, the Himalayas are like, it's like the first, I was talking about with my dad, and it's like the first time you see Mount Shasta, or if anybody has ever seen like Mount Rainier, or these like volcanic, you know,
it's incredible,
huge, and you're like right there, and you have no idea that this presence is there. And then all of a sudden it's just like, boom, hi, I'm here. I've been here the whole time, and I will always be here. And it's just, you know, profound.
Yeah.
Even in the short time, like post 9/11, there was like a couple days of like no flights. I remember there was also like staggering differences in just like that short amount of time of air quality in places. So, I mean, it's just, that's incredible. It is. Things can change. It doesn't
and
all have to
be right away. And how quickly it sort of is like, okay, this is what we're supposed to be doing. This is what we know how to do. There was also one where these deer who normally are in like a tourist area that get fed by tourists, all of a sudden all the tourists were gone in this temple. I think it was in Japan, but I'm not 100% sure. And so then they had no one to feed them. And so then the older generations of the deer led them back to these meadows that were like in the city that they remembered were where they Amazing. Used to feed. And they had to like walk through all these streets and like places, you know, where it had been like 30 years since anybody had been there, but they remembered and they knew to go there. So cool. So anyway, I might have spoiled almost all of them, but it's still worth it to watch for yourself and then to think about all the pieces. And then also, you know, that it was like, I don't know, maybe 20 or something different scenarios. And like, just thinking about how that there's so many more that we don't even know about. So that's mine.
Thank you so much for telling us that.
Yeah.
That's like motivating in a way. That's any like respite from nihilism that we can offer yeah. is helpful.
Yeah, totally.
Right. Without being Pollyannish too. You right. know, because that's just irritating. Absolutely. And there were yeah. a few things about the film that I did find a little irritating, but when I sort of was like, I'm going to put those aside because it's more important that I get inspired by this. And then I went with it and it was pretty magical. So thank you to my parents for making me watch that. So I think, Shelly, what about you? What's Love your it. Agitation?
Well, I'm about 48 hours into just kind of having this living rent-free in my brain. Because, you know, we're back to school, right? And after the good part of the last 18 months, you know, being on lockdown, not at, you know, schools. But now it's everyone's just fully back to school. That's where we're at. And there is discourse. And I saw some on Saturday that it became kind of like a larger kind of Twitter war. But the two people who were all kind of stemmed from are two journalists. The first one is Walker Brageman. He is, you know, very, very left-leaning, has a lot of good takes, and he is child-free. I don't know. I think child-free is kind of used for people who are like, proudly, I'll never have kids. And I don't know if that's the case for him. I think he's like getting married or something, but he doesn't, you know, he's not a parent. And Glenn Greenwald, who is a increasingly reactionary libertarian journalist.
I got corrected. You know, apparently he's not a libertarian, according to some. I don't know. He seems pretty libertarian to me.
I think he thinks he's more kind of left libertarian. Okay. But I think that that's how he identifies. I'm pretty sure. You know, and he is a parent. He lives in Brazil. And, you know, I'm at the point where I don't like to preface Glenn Greenwald as, like, he's done some really important work. I did that for, like, I don't know, a year, year and a half. Every time he would say something fucked up, I would be like, well, he's done, you know, but this is, and I'm at this point, I'm just like, fuck that guy, I hate him. So Walker Brageman makes what turned into a, you know, long thread, but I think the initial tweet matters, right? Even if you later on kind of hedge it and work backward, the initial tweet that you make is like your thesis. And I see his tweet on Sunday, and it says, it's not as traumatic for kids. Missing school is not as traumatic for children as catching COVID and dying. And I just, my first reaction to it was like, I feel like this take was better last year, you know, when there was like some hope, right, that we would be supported and that we would all work together and get through this. But right, you know, as school's starting and we're all doing this, that take just felt like, I don't really understand the function of this tweet, because
yeah.
We don't have a choice, right? So Glenn Greenwald goes after him and takes the position of, you know, it is really bad for kids to be out of school for 18 months, actually. And you don't understand because you're not a parent.
In a pretty, like, ridiculously unprofessional, which, like, it's Twitter, so whatever.
That's his thing. But, he is so reactive.
Well, but then he turned it into, like, it's worse to let kids drive in cars because there's more car accidents.
Oh, yeah. He started making...
off his... Mm-hmm. I mean, like, what are you even doing right there?
Yeah.
What?
Wait.
Yes, that was Glenn Green. That was, like, where he ended up. The whole thing was, like... And people were like, are you serious? And then he doubled down and tripled down and quadrupled down about the analogy of cars.
This is like how he is on Twitter. Just absolutely like makes like just the most pest. Boneheaded. Yeah, he is. So, I mean, and the other, you know, and you have to look at Glenn Greenwald's beliefs because making that statement that he made is not in a vacuum. It's in a context of him being anti-mask mandates, anti-vaccination mandates, very well off. And I would suspect that he's probably got like private tutors or whatever. Like he is not I doubt that he is in the same situation as the majority of working class parents. In the United States or Brazil or wherever, right? Like, I just, you know, he is advocating for children to go back to school. And I actually do agree with him. So I'm a parent of a six-year-old, and I was very, very, very willing to keep my child out of school for the kindergarten year, as much as that, like, sucks, right? And I knew it wasn't going to be great for him, but I was willing to do it. And I really thought, like, we're going to get through this in, like, a year. He'll definitely, like, no chance at all that we'll still be in this situation when he's heading into first grade. So, you know, I did that. So I stayed home and I was working. I am, you know, single with, like, a little bit of support, but not very much. And not during the day, you know, for the most part. And it was really... fucking hard, you know? I never questioned what I was doing. I never agreed with the demands to open school. I knew what I was doing was the right thing, and I also was broken by it, you know? So I'm just like watching these two dudes who are like economically comfortable. Walker Bragman comes from, you know, money. So like even though he generally has takes I agree with, he also cannot begin to put himself in my position. So when he's saying something like that, he's not understanding that, like, I am at the point where it is actually really bad for my kid to be out of school socially, especially when this is, like, now just this indefinite thing, right? When before, it was like, it felt like there was, that this would end. And right now, it does right. not. And the right. prospect of keeping my child home... and, like, out of an environment, you know, where he's around peers, you know, I had a conversation with another mom who was like, you know, they really need to be around other people to reinforce the stuff you're telling them because they don't give that much of a shit when you're trying to, like, correct their behavior. But when they get knocked down a few pegs by their peers or another adult that they look up to and hearing the same things that you're telling them, like, these are really important. Like, things will resonate and click with them more when there's, you know, triangulation or reinforcement or all those things that are really important. And
sure.
And so... I am now, I you know, back last year, there was, like, very early on in the lockdown, you would see these kind of, like, you know, writers and, like, kind of the professional managerial class type people. They're in a two-parent household, and they're staying home with their kids, and they're already just whining and complaining about how hard it is. And I would, like, join in the chorus making fun of them, you know, like, oh, my God, you know, oh, it's so hard to have my kids around. And after a year and a half,
kids probably feel the same way about that too, we're saying.
Yeah, it just, like, there was a team spirit that was necessary last year that is very evident we're never going to fucking have, right? So when I see Walker Bragman saying, you know, kind of, if you're your kid's going to be less traumatized by missing school than dying of COVID. All I think is, my kid has to go to school, and you're right, I feel fucking terrified. I feel fucking terrified, and all it does is make the majority of parents, so many of us, did everything right and did our part, and we're learning it was like, it feels like it was all for naught, right? And,
yeah. Doesn't it all just come back to how we really live in a failed state? I mean, this isn't the only country going through this, but I mean, Shelly, you and I talked about this a little bit yesterday, and I don't have a kid, and although I'm close to numerous people who have kids, and there are kids in my immediate family, and you know, talking through this again, just visiting my family and like what my sister's thinking about, I was a little bit more, I didn't feel as defensive at all, and I was surprised by yours, but it totally makes sense being in the parent seat versus being looking at it from the outside in terms of Walker's original tweet, because I mean, especially as what he went on to say, like, I heard it as like he wasn't critiquing parents, he was critiquing, again, like our government that is perfectly willing to sacrifice all kinds of people, and now we can add children to the list for the economy. And like, which economy? Whose economy, right? The economy of corporate America.
Oh, children were sacrificed long ago. Their school hours from 7:30 to 3:30 or whatever are shaped so you can go to work. Right. Not because it works for their brain's development. I mean,
right. Well, even school in the first place is an element of that, right? I mean, like, public school. There's
prep them for the corporate life. Sit there in your cube.
Absolutely. But, I mean, with this new variant that is affecting more children, if we didn't have a failed state government, then there would be no question what we would be doing right now to protect kids and parents and teachers. But I think your point also about Glenn Greenwald being, you know, piping up for children, but then being opposed to mask mandates and vaccine mandates, which is what would make people safer if they have to go to school, is also like the other side of the coin. Like, he's out of his fucking mind right over this.
Yeah. And I should probably mention the decisions that I've had to make over the past couple of weeks. So Millie, co-host, who has a kid who's a little bit younger than mine, they love each other. Millie is in Arizona. I'm in California. And I was planning to move to Arizona to live with them and kind of like have like a communal living situation. And it was going to be economically easier on me. There was just so many like really, really good reasons.
The beginning of us breaking up the nuclear family, all that good
exactly
jazz.
Family abolition. So that's what we were going to do. And the day before the truck that was going to pick up all my stuff that was packed was expected to arrive, which was last Wednesday. It was on Tuesday that Governor Ducey of Arizona, who has been shitty in a lot of ways, but just kind of took it to a really, really next level situation by incentivizing schools to against mandating masks and teacher vaccinations, using like $200 million in COVID relief money. So he's using COVID relief money to pay schools to not just
and
take
that was on top of him already, you know, passing laws that would make it illegal for schools to make those mandates anyway. And then when he was facing, you know, a rush of schools, obviously backing up against that, saying, no, actually, we are going to make this a mandate because we saw the first week with terrifying numbers and had to, you know, quarantine hundreds of kids, that then he went ahead and took it a step further to then use the money allotted, as you said, for COVID relief.
And wasn't it not even really incentive so much as a, if you go ahead and do these mandates, you will not get federal funding. So it's like,
yeah, it might have
no,
been.
That was on top. That was on top. So it was like two levels, you know. The first one was you will not get funded if you mandate. Then the next one was we're going to actually take that CARES relief fund and give it to schools that are not.
Okay. Well, you can't have it sitting around, so you got to give it to the good guys, the ones that don't give a shit about their kids or teachers. Yeah, and that's not the only state where that's happening. So,
well, right. And I just want to say, I mean, for me, it really comes down to, you know, we closed for like a couple months here. There was nothing really shut down ever. And we're lucky enough to be rural for most of the state that the numbers weren't, you know, crazy like they were in more, you know, condensed areas like New York City. And but, you know, Phoenix got hit hard. Tucson got hit hard. Anyway, because we took the precautions up front. I think, yes, that we were given false information by the CDC that all we needed to do was vaccinate. And by making that an allowance and the public never shutting down, never, you know, never being able to get enough relief for small businesses to not have to go and reopen.
And telling us we could take off the fucking masks.
Yeah.
Which is and why we're in this situation here.
Talking about, right, but we never, exact in Arizona, it was a very short time that masks were even a discussion, is what I'm saying. But then the CDC coming over was saying, oh, it's okay, we're not going to even require them, just get vaccinated, then you'll know you're safe. And now we're in a position where, you know, again, numbers are crazy, schools are open with no precautions. And you know, at a basic level, what PPE is nothing. Like
And then we've got like Israel, the most highly vaccinated, you know, illegitimate nation in the world.
Illegitimate country. Good point.
Asterisk.
Non-country. Block of land.
But you know, I was looking at their numbers are wild. So you know, there was a period of time where we thought here in the United States that a lot of the reason the Delta variant was getting out of control was because we still had large swaths of people unvaccinated. But it's also looking like full, you know, closer to full vaccination isn't stopping.
And we went from like, okay, we're not willing to mandate masks, and now we're mandating vaccines. And I'm personally vaccinated, but like, I don't think we should mandate putting anything into anybody's body. I think that has to be like, okay, let's educate the public. Let's not create this to be like a political war of whether this vaccination is, you know, a microchip or whatever the hell. But if we could just like back up and say at a basic level, let's keep people home and mandate masks.
Well,
like that
we have
seems
no
a lot less intrusive.
Precautionary principle ethic in the society that we live in. So, you know, the idea of the, you know, the least like intervention being something that we should, you know, start with is just, it's just like not a thing in the United States. So
I don't agree with forced or mandated vaccines in a more general sense, but I do think in a school setting and in healthcare settings, that if you want to work in a place like that and serve the public, I do think that that should be a requirement, and you can opt out and do something different with your life if you want to. But
this was just hard though, because it hasn't been around as long for children, so it gives me pause on that, you know, because it's like we've had it for 2 seconds, and I just like all these people who are like, it's approved by the FDA, and it's interesting to be working.
The FDA approves so much nasty.
I know,
stuff,
exactly,
you guys.
Exactly. Seeing all these like beauty counter consultants that Millie and I both work with being like, the FDA approved the vaccine, it's like, you guys, we spend the rest of the half of our time talking about how the FDA is garbage and doesn't have any sense to their regulations. So it's a little bit odd to be like cheering on the FDA when.
But Shelley, you're talking about a mandate for staff.
Yeah.
That's what I thought I heard you say. You're
but
not talking
we,
about
but
kids.
Again, saying if you like want to be skipped, a teacher. We skipped all of these steps in between making every public. I mean, I went into doctor's offices. I went into the county buildings. Nobody was ever mandated to wear masks. So, like, we went from a step from mandating that, at the very least, social distancing and everything, to mandating something that's been on the, you know, hasn't been out there for that long to put into your body, which is, like, again, there's so many
poorly
precautionary
done.
Steps.
Yeah, poorly no, done. The whole As thing usual. Has been a total mess, but, you know, I just... And so I, you know, every single in every, you know, Trump, Biden, CDC, Fauci. So all the people who have, you know, all of this mistrust you know, you just look back and see the erratic back and forth, advice changing constantly, including just like, you know, I still remember Fauci saying that masks were completely unnecessary early on. And so, you know, when the people who are feeling like particularly, you know, anti-authoritarian about this, I'm just like, how could you argue with it? Because the leadership has been,
oh my God, it was, you know, so weird terrible. Though also, and I don't know if this has anything to do with it, anything, but you could cut it. But Trump like went to a rally, which why the fuck, who the hell is going to these rallies? But then he's like, yeah, actually the vaccine works, man. Like, get it. And then everybody like booed him off and stuff. And it was like, what? Like, what is happening right now?
But that is so interesting, right? Because it illustrates, by the way, I see tons of Trump 2024 merch and flags.
So much.
But anyway, I think that's illustrative. Illustrative.
Illustrative.
I think that's, thank you. Ooh, illustrative. That's better.
Yeah.
Of the fact that actually there's more commitment to the ideology than to the person, which is like,
right,
scarier.
Well, but that the person morphed the ideology that then they clung to, and now it doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. But like, why don't we have a public health system that could like say, actually, this is all false, that the public was then like, okay.
Well, the thing, it's crazy because people's distrust of the system is like, at its core, being distrustful of a system that clearly doesn't give a fuck about you is a very logical reaction mm-hmm. to a system that doesn't give a fuck about you. Which is why it's so weird when liberals are so like in, you know, it's like that just shows it of like liberals being like, I believe whatever I'm told by the government, unless it's Trump, mm-hmm. but in all other ways. And it's like, a lot of these people haven't even changed who they are, you know, like, what are you talking about?
Right.
Yeah. Anti-authoritarianism is good, but don't conflate that with community health measures. You know right. what I mean? Not everything that is like you're doing for the good of the group is an authoritarian fucking fascist.
Well, that's why the system doesn't actually stop us from being anti-authoritarian. It's fine with it. Right. In fact, it'll fucking co-opt it and sell it back to us with Coca-Cola mm-hmm. because that's no threat. What is a threat is a community-minded ethic, is a collective sense. And if we have that, then, oh my God, we gotta shut that shit down. But rebels are no problem.
Yeah.
Well, I was just gonna say some of the anti-authoritarian stuff, you know, is just like, can get really scary because people having fears. It's like nobody, okay, I shouldn't say that. That's really cocky. But I have been impacted by Big Pharma in ways that most people have not, right? My mother. Yeah. Was, you know, so if anybody has reason to distrust the pharmaceutical industry, it's me. Like, I have lots and lots of reasons to feel that way. But what doesn't make sense to me? I mean, I know, like, we don't know what's in it or whatever, but the people who think that it is, like, a conspiracy to harm us is ridiculous because we're the workforce. Like, we create the profit. So, like, what would be the incentive to harm every single person in this country with a vaccine in some way? You know, like,
especially it's just people who don't hanging fruit. The people that they do murder, if they're going to murder people, are the people who are not able to get the vaccine at the same rates as people who they're not trying to murder. You know?
They need us healthy and working for the most part. And they need some of us sick, too. And, like, well, that's just how that works.
Don't put it past them to be so short-sighted in the interest of profit that they don't have a long game, you know? But that's where it's like, they actually have people who are smarter who intervene and say, you know, so it's like a balancing act. And that's where the elites are not always on the same page. Like, some of them are more short-sighted and scorched earthy. And some of them are like, hey, I mean, this is where it's like, why the Democratic elite and the global financial elite were like, we can't really deal with this Trump guy being in office. This is a pain in the ass. This is exposing the whole fucking thing in ways that doesn't work for us. And it's much better for us to have a calm and collected and not irrational leader who is one of us, which Trump is not. And so we're going to go back to that. And again, though, but people's like, it's like they see like a little bit of a glimmer through the haze and then glom onto it and then turn it into something that's like, you know, no, it's not lizards, you guys. It's not as black and white as that.
Right.
Yeah, the conspiracy here is money. That whenever I talk to some like tinfoil hat person, I'm just like, yes, there is a superlative conspiracy, and it's not what you think it is. It's kind of just money and power, but mostly money. You know what I mean?
And
you don't
the
have
reason,
to actually try that hard.
Right. And the the reason there is such a push from, you know, I know that the push for vaccines is ultimately so that, you know, I can continue working and producing a profit. But I also want a vaccine because I believe in the science of vaccines and I understand the risks. But to me,
I'm not undercutting any science around vaccines. What I'm saying is there was a lot of precautions that we're not talking about as part of the solution, mm-hmm. particularly distancing from other fucking people and wearing masks. Is actually really important, and we're seeing that because vaccinated people are carrying the same amount of viral load as non-vaccinated people. So we're gonna keep spreading it around unless we use all of our fucking tools.
And the virus is going to continue to adjust. So I mean, that's the part that just it's like
we never got ahead of it.
Nobody understand this, and I do think that Walker was talking about that like over the summer was saying like. When Delta was like very early, he was like, this is going to be a disaster, which I think mm-hmm. is what he was kind of trying to harken back to. If our government gave a fuck, this is not the situation we would be in.
Right.
Because you could have seen this coming a mile away.
Yeah. I ultimately like Walker Brackman. So I hate Glenn Greenwald. I like Walker Brackman. But that exchange in particular, it just took him a while to get to the point, you know, and he didn't really say a lot about what is actually happening, and it was very idealistic, like here's all the things that need to happen that are not going to happen, right? Like anybody who's actually facing these decisions already knows that, so it just feels kind of like idealistic.
Well, that's the tragedy of the victimization of this situation, you know. And I know you know, and because this is the place where it's like right now most real for you, and that's what's also so terrible is it's like we also don't really, even those of us who really care, sometimes it's really hard for us to remember to be in the space of like compassion and like basically what we're doing is putting people in the terrible situation in all these ways over and over again. You're in a terrible situation because you don't have health care and you have to decide whether to like plunge your family into permanent debt or get healed, you know, and I won't go through all the examples. And it's like, and what that means is that as people are dealing with that and we talk about it in some sort of like intellectualized way, that actually comes across as not supportive. It doesn't feel supportive.
Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, that's what that sounds right. And it's just a really complicated thing. But I do want to say what I think as a parent who takes COVID extremely seriously and, you know, very much appreciates the dangers and risks of all of these impossible choices that we're making right now. You know, like I said, I was going to live in Arizona. I decided to stay in California. So here we do have mask mandates in school and everybody takes it super seriously and teachers are all going to be like fully vaccinated within the next month. But what they're not doing here is offering hybrid and remote options for the parents who can, because there are parents who can keep their kids home. And not all of them want to do full on homeschooling. They might want to do a remote
and parents
option. Maybe
with
that's
family
easier.
That, you know, have immune compromised or whatever different that can't expose.
Right. Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Or
so,
kids who are sick or disabled in some way, you know, that they've needed that option for a long time. It's an accessibility thing in general.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So we need options. We need safe schools and we need, you know, options to reduce the density in schools for people who don't have a choice. And that's not happening here in California either. That to me feels like I know that we need to keep naming the larger problem. But I also, I am nihilistic at this point about begging the government for help, right? That feels like...
No, you're right. And when you said to me last night that, where it's like, that is what should happen, but it's like, as a parent, what am I supposed to do with that? Because it's not going to happen. So like...
Right.
And, you know, as somebody, you know, I mean, maybe there's other people who aren't, like, actually actively working to try and change that. But it's like, especially when you are like, yes, I'm trying to change our government. But in the meantime, my kid is getting older and needs to fucking be around some kids his age.
My kid is fucking weird. Like, I cannot overstate how regressed into his own imaginary world. Jessica got to experience a couple hours of it recently in a Zoom call. And that is what he's like all the time. And he doesn't know how to, like, talk about real life. He's been ignored, you know, for 18 months. And I was I still feel like last year was 100%, you know, worth it given what I thought was going on. And it just, at this point, you know, it is true that kids are getting fucked up, and if this is indefinite, we really can't do this to them, actually.
All right, well, that's really fucking agitating for so many fucking reasons. Yeah, so speaking of assholes and asshole behavior, let's move into the next. We talk about assholes so much on this show. This is the butthole show. No, it's not that.
No.
Okay.
No. I feel like it could be so much better if that was what we were trying to do instead of having that just happen by accident.
True.
All right, so am I the asshole? So this one is not going to be the kind where we might have some different or complex opinions about it, but it was one that was really funny and got a lot of traction on Twitter, but I don't think any of you have seen it because you don't see every single thing that gets traction on Twitter like I do. So, you know, like, relatively speaking to other am I the asshole posts, this one, like, went viral and... That's why I'm choosing it. And also, we hate homeowners associations.
We do.
Okay, so am I the asshole for owning 3 dogs against my HOA's 2-dog rule? My parents moved to a retirement neighborhood, so I moved into their neighborhood after my job required me to move to their state. We have 3 dogs. However, 2 of them look almost the same, so we would never walk all 3 at once.
Doppelganger dogs.
Doppelganger.
It worked for 2 years. Well, my body neighbor, and I think body, like, I was trying to kind of, I think body kind of means like busybody, nosy person. Okay. It might be like,
yeah,
that's what I'm deducing. Well, my body neighbor has been telling everyone we have 3 dogs and bitching about it on Nextdoor. We also love Nextdoor on this show.
Okay, yeah. That person's the asshole. Done.
The HOA asked to investigate. One of my dogs was at the vet, so I said, go ahead. And they walked through the house, and the neighbor was outside. She later walked up to me all ugh. I love the way this person writes. She later walked up to me all ugh, saying, did the HOA find your dog? I said, no, they didn't. Mind your own business, bitch. She then...
I love it.
That's what I would have said, too.
She then went on next door to complain again, but the rest of the neighborhood is now calling her crazy.
That's yes. Great.
Yeah, it seems like the asshole got her retribution there. That was
that was
I love it.
That was just like
that neighbor is an asshole. Just,
yeah, no doubt.
Okay, so that's it. That's
the whole thing.
Okay, so that person just wanted to share how they outsmarted the asshole.
Yeah, it's just a really good one. And I also love hate it. HOAs and Nextdoor and body neighbors
and neighbors who snitch neighbors on their fucking neighbors
what
for
is
nothing
that?
Yeah. Over an extra dog. That?
Well, it's not like this person who posted it would say if the dog, like, barked all night or, like, dug up all her roses or, like, you know what I mean? If there was some naughtiness going on, like, we wouldn't know from the person posting about her asshole neighbor.
Millie, your devil's advocate matches mine because I wondered that. Are the dogs assholes? Because if the dogs are assholes, then 3 asshole dogs are worse than 2 asshole dogs. But
listen, I just think it's a principle that you don't snitch on your neighbors.
Right.
But then what's the solution?
Talk
even
to
if
them.
The dogs are being... Yeah, I mean, couldn't you... it sounds like she didn't have a legitimate complaint other than
no,
the number
she
of dogs.
Like
because she could have made the complaint...
Arbitrary.
Around that. And then right. whatever... Mm-hmm. the two dogs that they did observe would have been guilty of whatever the thing is, and then that would have been dealt with. But that doesn't sound like that's
although
what
we do get a very biased view of the story. I wish all, that Am I the Asshole case. Like went and was like, what's your response?
Right. We need that.
Right. Okay, well, an HOA thing happened to me this week that I'm going to share then, since we're talking about this
asshole.
Oh, again?
It makes me boil.
Every month.
Yeah, well, I'm doing it again because it's my main source of
HOAs.
It's very localized anti-authoritarianism. Hyper-localized. So the other day, we're renters in an HOA. We have a little bit of lawn out in the front. We live in Las Vegas in the middle of the desert. There are lots of golf courses and Bellagio, and I'm not saying that we're taking up a lot of water, but I don't like the fact that we have lawn out front. So we have, our next door neighbor came over and was like, hey, you have a leak, which I really appreciate. You should tell your neighbors if they have water leaks because they probably don't want to have one. And I was like, oh, thank you. So I shut it off. So I texted the property management lady who likes us and is like also thinks the HOA is ridiculous, and she was like, we may be looking into the owner might want to replace the lawn with gravel or some other thing because of like water limitations. And I was like, we would love that. It seems really wasteful to be watering lawn in the desert. And she was like, I agree, that's great. She said, we need to get the grass. She said, send me a picture of the grass, which is currently not super green because I'm not going to water it. And she said, we need to get the grass back up to looking green before we can submit paperwork to Water District for grass conversion rebate. So they need my help to water the lawn twice a day by hand early in the morning and at night to bring the lawn to looking fresh and green before we can apply for converting it to a non-water using front yard.
We live in clown world.
So Caitlin made a good point, which is that I should just get a can of green spray paint, which I'm really thinking that will happen.
I'm not doing it.
Where does that water run out to?
That was my question. Like, if we do get rain, because we do get rain sometimes, actually, in this
and it probably has a drain that's going somewhere.
Yeah. No, Millie, so I don't know.
My solution is also, what would that do to like the insects that live there and stuff like that? That's not good.
So I'm not sure.
It's fine.
I gotta look into it. Maybe there's some like spinach dye I can make or something. I don't know.
You should just strew spinach all over your yard.
She won't notice. We've got so many mixed greens. I'm just gonna, yeah. Front yard salad.
Just strew
okay.
A
anyway.
Word.
Yeah.
Can it be? Okay.
Can't you just Photoshop the picture? They're not gonna come to your house.
No, they are. They're all around. They're always watching.
But I thought it was applying to the water board for a rebate or whatever.
Yeah, but they'll be in communication with the HOA. Dicks, they work together. So
Dicks
yeah.
United.
I have neighbor allies though now. I'm building neighbor allyships with baking, finally. Anyway, thanks for letting me go off about my HOA. I don't know if we'll keep that or not. But
if you have a solution for Jessica, you can find that tweet on Twitter and you can weigh in there about something that
would be
better than chemical paint or spinach drewing.
We'll include the link to the tweet in our show notes.
It's funny. You just like chop it up really fine and just like scatter it for the picture.
Follow me for more pictures of my front yard salad.
I think that's a wrap on this one.
Wrap it.
Okay. Thanks, everyone. Bye.
All right. Thank you for tuning in. You can sign up for our email list so you can get a notification whenever a new episode drops. Sign up to get notified at agitatedpodcast.com. And we want to hear what's agitating you. So let us know at agitatedpodcast.com. Click the menu item titled What's Agitating You? You can write in or record a message that we may play in the future on an episode. You can also leave us your feedback under the Contact Us section of the website.
Don't forget, we've got stickers. If you'd like one, drop us a line with your address through any of our social media channels or the website. And speaking of social media, we'd love to connect with you there. You can find us at Agitated Podcast on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook.
Please don't forget to subscribe and rate us 5 stars on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you tune in to podcasts. And if you would, leave a positive review on iTunes. It really helps the algorithm bump our podcast and new people find us on our show.
And please share us with your friends. Podcasts like ours grow through word of mouth. So thank you for your support. And a big thanks to Jason and Radical Guide for helping us produce this show, and Alfonso for helping us with promotion. See you next time.